station, its staff, or underwriters. Time will be made available for all sorts of viewpoints. And support for KMED comes from Chautauqua Natural Foods. They are in Garberville, just off the town square. Locally owned for 37 years, they specialize in local and organic produce, natural groceries, nutritional supplements, and body care products. The Suji House, their globally inspired restaurant, is now open Tuesday and Wednesday from 12 to 6 for dinner, and Thursday and Friday from 12 to 8.
Well, once again, welcome to this month's Ask Your Herb Doctor. My name's Andrew Murray. It's April 19th, 2019, and this is Ask Your Herb Doctor. KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM proudly hosts this free speech independent radio program that we do the third Friday of every month. And from 6:30 until 7 o'clock, callers are invited to call with questions either related to this month's continuing topic of antiviral herbs, and we're going to break into nanoparticles and their health effects, negative health effects, and also looking a little more at some other articles surrounding polyunsaturated fats and cancer incidence. So that'll be something we'll bring out here. The tide is slowly changing and slowly turning, and as Dr. Pete has said and has been famously quoted in the past, a lie gets around the world quicker than truth can tie up her shoelaces. So once again, we're very welcome to have Dr. Pete join us on the radio show live. You there, Dr. Pete?
Yes. Hello.
Thanks so much for joining us. I just first wanted to start a very brief introduction into some of the things that we're going to cover again this evening, which is a kind of follow-up from the last couple of months that we haven't finished, but I won't dwell too great length on it. The antiviral activity of selected medicinal plants, for which there are plenty of articles. If you look at PubMed, for example, you can type in the Latin name of a plant and type in antiviral activity, and you can get a host of search results that will come back with clinical trials that have been done on that plant for that known virus, whether it's herpes or, you know, hepatitis or whatever. So whilst we know that the source of this information may not be fully accurate, as is always the case with everything, PubMed is one of those places that does supposedly publish, you know, reviewed articles, and like ResearchGate and other affiliates, is at this point, I think, probably one of the only real avenues that we have to look for the results that we hope are not skewed and tell the facts like they are. I know I've interviewed Dr. Pete, and many times he's quoted supposedly scientific research articles that are nothing of the sort and has pointed out blatant errors in the research and has put the record straight. I think before I carry on, I would like to get you, Dr. Pete, just to introduce yourself to people who maybe haven't heard of you before, though I think your fame is spreading around the world. if you just outline your academic and professional background for people that have maybe not heard of you before, and also, like I've said, you know, all of these programs will be on an Instagram page, and we'll be doing a fairly intensive Ray Pete-based ideology Instagram page for people to find all of the information that you've been talking about, rather than recapitulated from various websites that are purporting to be Dr. Pete friendly, some of which are suggesting things that I know you wouldn't suggest. So just for people listening tonight, it's April 2019 here now, and hopefully in the next 2 months or so, we'll have an opening Instagram page, and we're going to chronologically, as well as by subject matter, list it in a logical sequence for people to educate themselves from the very beginning of your work, Dr. Pete, which was on polyunsaturates and thyroid and hormones. But anyway, enough of me. Would you just introduce yourself?
Between 1968 and 72, I studied biology, emphasizing physiology, especially reproductive physiology, at the University of Oregon. But I didn't start academic study of biology until I had about 20 years of investigating controversies in biology, and having decided that academic biology, especially in the U.S., was too dogmatic and commercial to really be scientific. But I finally decided to go through the academic process and find out some of its weaknesses in the process. And after getting the PhD, I just continued my independent studying, doing nutrition counseling, hormone counseling, and studying how the brain, reproductive, and immune systems in particular interact with the environment, especially nutrition.
You've been a big proponent for a long time now of getting people to stop using polyunsaturates, quoting Burr and other people who had previously studied this and were supporting it in the, I don't know, mid-30s or 40s, and from there on. And you've always mentioned the fact that the paint industry was a big user of these vegetable oils, and that when the petroleum industry came into being, synthetic additives and paints were then manufactured from petroleum and put the seed oil producers at risk. And so they decided to put these seed oils into the food chain. And for a long, long time now, you know, as I grew up in the 70s, the polyunsaturates and the sunflower oil and everything else was margarine, you know, was just advertised everywhere as the health, heart healthy, you know, wonder oil. And the things that our forebears had used, the very natural products like saturated fat from beef, these kind of things, animal fats and animal products even, largely.
A big study in veterans of the heart healthy diet with margarine, I found that it not only caused more cancer, but also increased deaths from heart disease. And that was a turning point against the original essential fatty acids, and that set the background for fish oil to come on the market.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think probably this is not the order I was going to ask you some questions related to things from antiviral components in medicinal herbs that you probably have read about and you would understand and be able to, you know, elucidate somewhat from your perspective of how they work, especially those we've talked about in the past, the dark pigments, the anthocyanin pigments that you have described as being radical quenching because they have the ability to mop up electrons and suppress inflammation and that kind of thing. But let me just I didn't send any of this to you, but I read this article. It just came out of the blue as I was looking at articles to support a negative detrimental effect from polyunsaturates, because gosh, you type in polyunsaturates and all you find is how good they are, how healthy they are, how cardiovascular friendly they are, how you can't live without them and how you'd be crazy not to use them. So there's a strength pushed in the industry, weighed on the pro-polyunsaturate side, that it's very difficult to find evidence for the opposite. But I came across this article, and it's entitled, "Are Diets High in Omega-6 Polyunsaturated Fatty Acids Unhealthy?" And this came out of work that was done at the University Hadassah Medical School in Jerusalem. And it said that, just I want to quote a small paragraph from it, and then we'll carry on in the order that I think we were going to do this subject in, with antivirals, and then move on to nanotechnology as an emerging potential problem. But anyway, it said that in the introduction, and I am quoting the introduction here, so for people that might even come across this article, yeah, it's plagiarism in some ways, but I just want to directly quote the article. It said Israel has one of the highest dietary polyunsaturated to saturated fat ratios in the world. The population consumes some 8% more omega-6 PUFAs than in the USA and some 10 to 12% more than in most European countries. Israeli Jews may be regarded as a population-based dietary experiment of the effect of a high omega-6 PUFA diet on disease, one of which until recently was widely recommended. Despite such national habits, paradoxically, there is a high prevalence of cardiovascular diseases from hypertension, non-insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus, and obesity, all diseases which are associated with hyperinsulinemia and insulin resistance and grouped together as the insulin resistance syndrome or syndrome X. There is also an increased cancer incidence and mortality rate, especially in women, in comparison with Western countries. Studies suggest that high linoleic acid consumption might aggravate hyperinsulinemia and insulin resistance, as well as being a substrate for lipid peroxidation and free radical formation, which I know you've mentioned extensively. Thus, far from being beneficial, high omega-6 PUFA diets may have some serious long-term effects, acting as the link between hyperinsulinemia, atherosclerosis, and carcinogenesis. So, what do you think of that article?
Very good.
So, you've got to search. I don't know if this had any bearing on the search results, folks, and I don't want you to interpret what I'm going to say as just the way that's evidence of it. But I was using Start Page as my browser, and increasingly going off Google, which I think obviously has become de facto for a lot of people just because it's so ubiquitous. But I truly believe, and this is my own personal opinion, that Google are streamlining results based on search terms that suit their agenda, folks.
A couple of sociologists recently did a study on a Google-like search engine, and they slightly jiggered the frequency of particular names of political candidates. Uh-huh. They thought they might be able to rig the choice in an election by 2 or 3%. Mm-hmm. It turned out they were getting a 48%
wow.
False
wow.
Result just by which name they favored with the search engine.
Yeah,
very horrifying about what Google could be doing.
Absolutely, and this mirrors what I said very early on in the beginning of that you have to be careful where you get your results from, because even published medical data is skewed and it's abused, and data is misinterpreted or downright corrected in favor of the results they're looking for. And so it is with the internet as well. I mean, as much as it is paradoxical that there's a wealth of information out there, but you've really got to be careful that now I think the information increasingly so is becoming manipulated by the main players in the world of the internet, you know, in terms of search engine results, and that's Google. Obviously, there are other players, but Google's one of the biggest, and certainly becoming a bone to contend with in terms of being objective about where you're getting your information from, without being on the fact-checking side of paranoia. There is definitely a weight of evidence to show that a lot of the search terms are being manipulated in terms of algorithms that are produced by these companies to either show or hide results that you would normally find. But anyway, so Start Page came up with this, and it was at the end of the day, and I didn't even have time, Dr. Pete, to put this into any kind of introduction for the show and the questions, but I thought that was quite interesting. I'll probably take a look at some Start Page search terms in terms of PUFA and its negative effects, because like I said, you generally just find all the positive stuff for them. Okay, so you've talked about naringenin before several times in different contexts as anti oxidant. And I don't know that you do, I'm just putting it out there that perhaps you've have a way of explaining naringenin's potential antiviral effects, because I know that there are quite a few studies that are showing naringenin as a preparation for herpes simplex virus being fairly effective. And not knowing as much perhaps as you do about naringenin and its activity, I wondered if you'd know anything that would support that.
Oh, yeah. I think it works the same way aspirin and progesterone and all of the cell stabilizers work. It increases the oxidative balance of the cell, simply reinforcing the effect of the oxidative respiratory metabolism. That makes the cell able to resist improper excitation, stabilizes it against random irritation, and just about anything that is unphysiological will destabilize the cell in the same direction. So these things protect against viruses, radiation, vibration, oxygen deprivation, sugar deprivation, too much of the polyunsaturated fats and too much phosphate, too little calcium, just anything that shifts the balance towards meaningless excitation or reducing proper energy production.
Okay, so this is a cell-stabilizing component, which also has a antiviral effect because of its energy saving effect, rather than allowing the cell to become excited and in an excitotoxic way, wasting energy and being unstable.
Yeah. When the virus wants to replicate, it excites the cell, gets the cell churning its mechanism, that damages the organism, produces more viruses.
Yeah. Okay, so there's naringenin, that was that one, and mainly oranges and lemons, the peel. But I found actually there was a greater proportion of naringenin actually in the membrane. So this is that kind of white, pithy membrane that you'll find either in between the segments of the fruit or just underneath the surface of the skin. So you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor, KMUD Garberville, 91.1 FM. From 7:30 until the end of the show, 8 o'clock, you're invited to call in our guest speaker, Dr. Raymond Pete, covering a few antiviral herbs before we get into the subject of particulates, especially the nanoparticulates and nanotechnology. The number here is area code 707-923-3911. Okay, then, I guess I'll very quickly just mention, because I don't see too much conclusive evidence here, but hemidesmus, which was Indian sarsaparilla, I saw a few articles there about its herpes simplex 1 and 2 activity. But then I wanted to mention pomegranate. I think this is a fairly ancient fruit that's been mentioned since biblical times. And an article that mentioned the effect of zinc in conjunction with pomegranate rind extract being 8 times greater in its virucidal activity than an equivalent mass of just purely pomegranate extract. So I would understand the pomegranate, again, to being fairly antioxidant, as I think that's the main reason it's juiced and sold as its potential health benefits. But from a point of view of the ion, zinc, I think it has been it obviously used as a sun blocker, and I think zinc on its own has been touted as a healing agent for speeding up the healing process in cold sores. Do you have anything to say on zinc or what you've heard or read before that would support any activity there?
I think the protein synthesizing function of zinc is like vitamin A for accelerating healing.
So the protein synthesizing effect, and this would be why it's would be used in the production of sperm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. All right. And then something that I'd have a kind of personal relationship with, if you like, between this one and the next one, is birch bark extract. And I had an article that was published by the University of Medicine and Pharmacy in Romania on betulin. And betulin and betulinic acid were two ingredients that were used for this, and had some pretty good results with it in treating melanomas and colon and cervical cancer. And this study seemed to show here that the double staining analysis that was conducted on the cells after they were treated measured the activity of the cell enzymes which were responsible for angiogenesis. And this was the rationale by which the extract had a anti-cancer effect, was that it directly interfered with angiogenesis and creation of new blood vessels.
Structurally, betulinic acid is analogous to progesterone.
And it's a triterpene, isn't it?
Sarsaparilla, I think, has a similar steroid.
Okay, yeah, they call it a pentacyclic triterpene.
Mm.
Interesting, okay. So they had this trial of X amount of people, and they said that it was fairly significant, its effects. And so they were calling out birch bark as a good source of betulinic acid and production of betulin. And there was one other tree actually, was the red alder. And they said also that Native Americans used the bark of the red alder tree to treat a variety of inflammatory conditions, from poison oak to other inflammatory skin conditions, as well as TB. Okay, so that's birch bark. And I wanted just to mention here briefly, and I'm doing a kind of trial myself. I know when we spoke maybe 2 months ago about skin cancers, I had, actually it was the beginning of the year, wasn't it, with Simoncini, the Italian doctor here who had, you know, a bunch of YouTube channels talking about iodine and his belief that there was a fungal origin of cancer, or especially candida as an origin of cancers, and that iodine's use was implicated in treating that because of its antifungal effect. So I got a product from Australia, and in Australia there has been, probably for about 20 years now, a patented herb-based product for skin cancer. And it works for both actinic keratosis, which is a kind of precancerous, it's called a cancer, but it's a precancerous lesion. Then obviously the basal and squamous cell carcinoma and melanoma. So this particular plant is a solanaceous plant, so belonging to the tomato family, called Solanum sodomaceum. There are other solanums that do have these solacidine glycosides. Aubergine is one of them, and I have a herbalist in England. He's about 82. I met his daughter while we were studying. She's like a second generation herbalist there. But anyway, he produces this cream. He bases on both aubergine and birch bark.
And we call aubergine eggplant.
Eggplant. Okay, there you go. So for those people that are listening, I'm talking about the eggplant. Anyway, both the aubergine and this Solanum sodomaceum both contain solamargine, and these are the glycosides that are attached, actually rhamnose sugars that are attached to this solamargine and directly kill cancer cells specifically and leave normal cells intact. And so he's actually patented this, I think it was a biochemistry doctor, and 25 years ago he patented this product, and it's been sold all over the world. And you can go on the website and you can, I think it's about 60 to 65% effective. It's not 100% effective 100% of the time, but there's quite a lot of anecdotal evidence there from people that have used it, and they've got nothing but good things to say about it. So anyway, I wanted to mention that I had on my forearms from sun damage what I believe, but again, this is anecdotal from me. I never had a biopsy taken to tell me that it was cancerous or precancerous, but definitely these raised, irregular bordered, pearly grey, sinister looking skin lesions that I was just, and I used 7% iodine on them. And the results from both of that are that after about 60 days, they're totally gone. So it took about 60 days, but I've no visible sign of anything left there that was there previously, and I'll keep an eye on it to see how it goes. But at the same time, I purchased this Curaderm from Australia, and I've been using that on what I have on the bridge of my nose, which I've had probably for a couple of years, has just stubbornly resisted any and everything I've put on it. But it's unequivocal at this point in time, because the results are still waiting. So, Dr. Pete, in terms of cancers and skin cancers especially, I know it's a little bit of a touchy subject from a global warming perspective, you know, if the planet's heating up or if we're losing our ozone layer, but cancers are definitely on the rise. And I think before we get into the rapid increase in cancer incidences, and we have some facts and analysis from a few departments that have done studies on this, in terms of cancer and skin cancer, do you have a way of defining it, or a way that you would understand it outside of the regular kind of sunburn causing genetic changes type approach, you know, that's...
Oh, for melanoma, sun really isn't the main factor. Mm-hmm. Most melanomas occur in areas that aren't much exposed to the sun.
Okay.
Back and inside of the thighs, even on the bottom of the feet. And it's a very hormone-sensitive thing. Estrogen has been suspected for a long time of being involved in it. I've seen dozens of apparent melanomas that disappeared. A couple of people who were diagnosed with terminal melanoma,
uh-huh.
a very advanced metastatic. It regressed when they changed their diet, used coffee, aspirin, and various nutritional things, vitamin D, a lot of orange juice and milk and such.
Is this an anti-estrogenic type approach then that you're...
Yeah. And so far, all of the melanoma people that I've talked to have had a really quick response from changing their diet.
Interesting. Okay. Have you come across many people yourself that have had, either actinic keratosis or basal or squamous cell carcinomas that have been treated effectively without any medical intervention?
The first one I saw, a man about 80, 45 years ago, put progesterone on his diagnosed lip cancer.
Okay.
And in a week or so, it was gone.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. Well, we're coming up to 7:30 here, so just to remind people again, this is Ask Your Herb Doctor, 91.1 KMUD. 91.1 FM, and the number is 707-923-3911. I got your recent newsletter, Dr. Pete, and I have definitely wondered about it myself. It's like everything else, you know, whenever you tamper with nature, things usually don't go too well. Obviously, there are some cases where we interfere with things and hopefully make them better. But nature does a pretty good job of selecting out the good from the bad, and I think we've gotten where we are because of its job doing that. But so nanotechnology is a rapidly progressing science, a little bit like CRISPR gene editing. I think it's got the same kind of mystique and some similar kind of fears surrounding it. It's found in many different products. It's not just something that builds nanotubules, for example, to promote ultralight strong structure, but it's put in skin creams. It's added to foods. I've got an article that I don't have to read at this point in time, because I'd like to get your feedback on the whole nanotech industry and where you see it causing problems, and what you think would be the right approach to its development and its, you know, coming into being a part of our science and not getting away from us like a Pandora's box opening. But what's your opinion on nanotechnology, where it's come from and how fast it's moving?
I'm not sure exactly where the industry came from. People have recognized that particles like soot spontaneously makes these highly structured ultra microscopic particles, and it the industry I think about 30 or 40 years after they recognized that these things were happening, they thought up things to do with them. About 35 years ago, I had some contact with the chemical industry, and without asking for it, they sent me 2-gallon-sized containers that weighed almost nothing, a sample of their products that they wanted to promote. I screwed the top off one of them, and the material floated out like smoke. It was fumed silica.
Oof.
Which is now being added to toothpaste and can be included in foods. It makes salad dressings seem more creamy.
Oh my gosh! How long ago was this?
35 years ago.
Wow. Okay. Carry on.
Anyway, it worried me that the stuff floats right into the air. Dangerous to be around. I closed it up and set it aside. I didn't know how to dispose of it in an ecologically safe way. The stuff can get into groundwater. Things of that sort are produced naturally by friction, tires on the highway, and smoke coming out of engines.
Right, like diesel engines.
So it's something being produced by ordinary processes of industry and social activities, but they're deliberately manufacturing it in vast amounts and thinking of new ways to make clothing deodorant, antiseptic, control heat and moisture better. But these particles, even in clothes, the fine particles, if they contact sweaty skin, actually can pass through the skin into the bloodstream.
Wow.
In small amounts.
Wow. Interesting. You mentioned soot. And that just reminds me of the chimney sweeps in the late 1800s in England. They would get testicular cancer. It was a well-known result. So that's funny that you mentioned that. I mean, soot is an ultra-fine nanoparticle in its own right, huh?
And it contains estrogenic,
right,
as well as carcinogenic chemicals. But the particles themselves, because of their shape and size... The reason asbestos is carcinogenic is its fine pointed crystalline structure.
Yeah.
And more or less spherical particles, if they're as small as the point of an asbestos crystal, the body interprets I think it's probably related to viral immune processes. Starts an inflammatory process when the particle has a certain fineness or length to diameter ratio. A sharp particle or a very small particle activates the inflammatory process, which excites a whole system of the cell into activity, which if you have the biological energy, you can segregate, isolate, and tamp down that excitation and recover. But when it becomes either too frequent, too intense, or your energy level decreases, the balance shifts towards inflammation, degeneration, production of fibrous tissues rather than functional tissues.
Interesting. I came across an article that was put out by the National University of Singapore, and the phenomena, they called it nanomaterial-induced endothelial leakiness, or nano-L for short. They had recorded the fact that this nano-L process accelerated the movement of cancer cells from the primary tumor and also caused circulating cancer cells to escape from the circulatory system because these nanoparticles created a gap physically within the endothelia large enough for cells to come in and out of, so thus evading what would normally be a host immune response within the vasculature. They physically were able to leak out of these spaces, and so that was one direct way in which nanoparticles had been implicated in causing cancer.
Most of the places are talking about gaps between cells, but that leakiness, it's really a basic thing that excess excitation or energy deficiency causes to happen,
right,
in all cells, that the substance of the cell leaks out. In a hypothyroid person, for example, if you exercise the muscle too much, it leaks its enzymes right through the surface of the cell, and particles, relatively big particles on the scale of these nanomaterials, the cell emits its own nanoparticles right through the surface of the cell when it's stressed. The leakiness is an intrinsic property of the cytoplasm when it's under stress. But they talk about it in terms of gaps because they have that membrane barrier theory.
It's mechanistic again, isn't it? I keep having to check myself. Every time I talk to you, you come up with this, and it's, yep, okay, the textbooks interpret this physiologically one way because that's the way they want you to remember it, that's the way they want to teach it and propagate it, but that it's a much more fluid, dynamic system that's in place rather than this rigid, mechanistic, lock and key type approach that they've always stuck by.
Just giving the cell glucose to get its energy up can stop that leakiness. And one of the interesting things about cancer, the tumors, that instead of looking at the what's inside the cancer cell, someone looked at what's outside of the cells in a tumor.
Right.
They found there was 1,000 times more ATP in the fluid of a tumor than in normal tissues. The cells are leaky, and they're leaking their necessary materials so fast that they are constantly in this overstimulated condition.
This would be an energy depletive state too, right? They're losing their basic building block for energy production. Interesting. Okay, so you're listening to Ask Your Herb, Dr. KMUD Garberville, 91.1 FM. From now until the end of the show, you're invited to call in. The number's 707-923-3911. And if we don't hear from you, which would be very unusual, I would just imagine that you're listening. Anyway, so Dr. Pete, in terms of an anti-inflammatory strategy for life, I know you've mentioned many substances which many people that we've worked with have changed their diet and their lifestyle. But in terms of energy, it's really everything that you've touched on this evening in these different subjects is based on a energy wasting perspective that causes cancer, and that the leakiness of a cell, for example, could be based on inflammatory mediators like estrogen and how energy wasteful an estrogenic environment is. And this is quite probably why, and I'm totally I'm totally sold on the whole thyroid thing, because the fundamental basis of human life is energy. Everything in the universe is energy. I'm not just being flippant or, you know, braggadocious or anything, but energy is the sum basis of everything that we see, do, and see. So thyroid hormone and glucose strike me as the two biggest fuels, substances that promote energy, because the whole process of ATP and muscular movement, for example, requires glucose splitting, that to drive the whole Krebs cycle and produce energy. And so when the thyroid hormone is low, or it's compromised because of blocks to its production or uptake or synthesis, then naturally the organism is going to get weaker, and there's going to come a point where you exceed the ability to put up with that, and then you start getting into a diseased state. So the engineer's got his finger up, and he's got his finger up for a reason. Okay, we have a caller. Let's get this next caller on the air. Caller, where are you from, and what's your question?
I'm from Redway, and my question is, would you please go over the information about the Australian herbal topical cream
sure.
for actinic sure. keratosis once again,
yeah.
and can it be obtained online?
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the product's called Curaderm, 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 and it's trademarked, it's patented. And yes, you can get it online. There's several different outlets, but the place that I did get it from was from Australia, but I think there are several European outlets for it. So that's what you want to type in, and you'll find that information online, no problem.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, so we have another caller on the air. Caller, you're on the air, and where are you from? What's your question?
Hello, I'm in Eureka.
Eureka, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I've got questions about Parkinson's.
Okay.
And what is kind of a good direction to take go with that?
Okay. Do you have a radio on in the background at all?
No, I have
it. All right, it's just a little bit of feedback. Okay, so your main question is Parkinson's and the best way forward with Parkinson's?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Dr. Pete, Parkinson's, I know it's multifactorial, and what they call Parkinson's now, I've also seen recent research showing that it's actually multifactorial, the neurofibrillary tangles and all the rest of the physiological findings are sometimes there way before the symptoms, and actually they're now wanting to break it down into a 5 or 6 different causative organisms that could be responsible. But what's your view on Parkinson's?
Keeping testosterone and related steroids up, the neurosteroids are very protective, and testosterone has just been identified as one thing that goes down in relation to Parkinson's. But the pregnenolone, progesterone, DHEA, and testosterone are all nerve protective and restorative. Vitamin D is another steroid that is extremely protective to the nerve cells.
What was that one, the last one you said?
The vitamin D.
I take vitamin D. How much should I take?
And phosphate should be reduced in the diet, along with the pro-inflammatory fatty acids. So more carbohydrate and sugar, and any good source of calcium and magnesium, milk, cheese, green vegetables, well-cooked, but less beans, nuts, and meat because of their high phosphate content.
So testosterone would be first and foremost in terms of what Dr. Pete said about its neuroprotective effects, and for males, very importantly, and not so difficult to achieve. In terms of Dr. Pete's recommendations for light weight-bearing exercise would be the best way to improve your general testosterone as a male. Obviously, avoiding the estrogenic substances is another no-brainer, because estrogen directly antagonizes testosterone. And so to avoid all of the polyunsaturates in the diet, obviously there's things from plastics interfering with hormones, etc., causing xenoestrogenic effects. So the food that you eat, you need to be careful, nuts, beans and seeds, to avoid those from the polyunsaturated perspective. And then to either use thyroid hormone if you are low thyroid, and you can check that with your temperature and pulses, and also things like aspirin are good anti-inflammatories for reducing generalized inflammation.
And fibrous foods, because they help to reduce the reabsorption of estrogen in the intestine, and because Parkinson's always, almost always involves sluggish intestinal movement.
Constipation, yeah, there you go. Okay, so did you get that list?
Yeah, let's see, vitamin D, testosterone, DHEA,
thyroid hormone, and making sure you're getting enough sugars in your diet. Making sure your bowels are working, you know, you're not constipated, or clearing up any constipation that you have, because you can reabsorb estrogen from the bowel.
Right.
So all of those pro-testosterone things, pro-energy things, and anti-estrogenic and inflammatory-mediated, you know, causative substances like the PUFA, the polyunsaturates in the food chain. Okay. All right. Well, if you need any other questions, we've got at the end of the show, I'll give out the best way to contact myself and how to find Dr. Pete's articles. I'm sure, in fact, I know there are a couple of articles on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and those kind of neurodegenerative processes that you could go ahead and read. We have another caller on the air. So let's take this call away from. What's your question?
I'm dealing with peripheral neuropathy in my feet.
Okay.
Caused by chemotherapy. And I'm wondering, you were talking about less estrogen producing foods and more testosterone. Anyway, if you could say the list of things to avoid, and or if there's a way to get that, I would be very grateful.
Sure.
Because it is an inflammation at an incredible level. It's very, very, very painful.
Sure.
And I've been taking some pain pills when I just can't stand. I can't stand taking the pills, and I can't stand the pain. So
right.
Anything you could do that might suggest that might mitigate this inflammation would be great.
Okay, so Dr. Pete, peripheral neuropathy post chemotherapy.
The nerve regeneration, peripheral as well as central. There have been many studies in animals showing that vitamin D and progesterone work together to restore nerves. I think it's a good idea to have a blood test for both vitamin D and progesterone, and keep the vitamin D at least in the middle of the normal range. 50 nanograms per milliliter is good, 50 or 60. And progesterone should be in the luteal range, even for a postmenopausal woman. It's good to supplement it if it isn't naturally detectable.
And this is because it's directly opposing estrogen.
The serum tests for estrogen are meaningful if you don't have a good amount of progesterone, because the after menopause, estrogen begins forming inside cells all through the body, fat cells, skin cells, breast, uterine cells, everywhere that you don't want it. It can be formed from adrenal precursors, and the anti-inflammatory things, aspirin, progesterone and thyroid, vitamin D, and calcium in the diet all help to minimize that inflammatory process of spontaneously forming estrogen in the tissues.
Okay, aspirin, vitamin D,
progesterone, thyroid hormone, and
I've
calcium.
I've taken that since I was in ninth grade.
Which, thyroid hormone?
Yes, and my thyroid organ is, it doesn't function.
Are you taking Synthroid, or are you taking...
I am taking Synthroid.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people who just get no benefit whatsoever from Synthroid. I think it's a very...
They can test it in my blood.
Yeah, you can
see
it.
For all the good that does.
You can see it in your blood, but you've got to convert it yourself, too, to active hormone, which is sometimes a problem for people. But I just found a lot of people who I've spoken with are very disappointed with any approach that Synthroid has taken them in. And there are other alternatives. I know that Dr. Pete's mentioned alternatives to it, and both the active form of T3 as well as...
Where does that come from? Where do you get that?
Well, typically you can go to your doctor and ask for a synthetic T3. If you are diagnosed hypothyroid, there shouldn't be any problem with that if you have an understanding doctor who, despite whatever levels you would have on a blood test, that would seem to show that you are treated and you have been treated and it seems to be within the range. If you've still got clinical symptoms of hypothyroidism, which are legion, you know, from
dry skin, I got them.
All of it, yeah. You probably know as
my whole life.
Yeah, exactly.
The active thyroid hormone T3 is itself directly anti-inflammatory, but even the Synthroid, it does have the good function of suppressing TSH. So if you are taking enough to keep your TSH close to zero, that has an anti-inflammatory effect. But the main anti-inflammatory action of thyroid is through the T3.
I think my body has a problem with uptake. Rather, I think that that's always been a problem for me. And I don't have any of the organs that produce estrogen.
Avoiding polyunsaturated fat is very important because it blocks the activation of thyroid into T3.
I've never subscribed to that. I always thought butter was probably better.
Good.
Also, with the, I'm interested in the iodine.
Okay.
Thank you.
I mentioned earlier that a 7% iodine, I'd used it topically on two lesions on my forearms, and both of which, one took significantly longer time than the other, but I'd had the one that took significantly longer, I'd had it longer. I'd had it probably for the best part of 3 years, and every summer I'd look at it and just be a little bit more concerned because it was just getting a little bigger and a little bit more scary and was very much activated by sunlight exposure, whereas the one on the other forearm, I'd just seen it last year. So that one cleared up the quickest. That cleared up in about 35 days, 40 days, and the one on my other arm, that took about 65 days, I think it was, in all.
And you just put iodine on?
Yeah, it's a 7% iodine, so you can get one...
Are you talking about the gray, kind of grainy thing?
No, it's a liquid.
On your arm.
Yeah, it was a raised kind of gray, white, pearly...
I think I have one.
Suspicious.
I'm on my way to Rite Aid.
Uh-huh.
And you said Curaderm?
Curaderm.
Does it end in an N or an M?
M, as in derm. Your
That's
skin,
what I
yeah,
okay.
your dermal layer, your
okay.
dermatitis,
yep.
dermatology. Okay, yeah.
I want to thank you very much. I will try these things.
Yeah, and I'll give out Dr. Pete's information at the end of the show, and you can go ahead and read his articles, which you'll find very interesting.
This has been so informative. It's the first time I've heard anything that even remotely.
Well, there you go, Dr. Pete. You see, we've been doing this for 10 years now, and there's still people that probably never heard you. And
I've only been here for a few years, and I don't always.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So, Dr. Pete, I was going to ask you what you were describing as an anti-inflammatory dietary lifestyle, but, I mean, you've already mentioned it, those things that you constantly, and I won't say constantly in a negative way, but you repeatedly highlight the fact that both aspirin, progesterone, thyroid, vitamin D, and calcium are important anti-inflammatory components of a healthy lifestyle.
And other things that people often neglect are getting sunlight as much as possible and doing things that are fun. You've heard of the enriched environment rat experiments that made their brains not only more intelligent but also bigger.
Yes.
That kind of entertaining environment causes rats to produce more progesterone and to have lower estrogen. So just doing things that are fun and interesting keep your hormones in the right direction.
Yeah, it's another reminder for folks out there listening to this right now that that whole subject, of which we have done several shows on environmental enrichment, has been backed up by lots of animal studies that have shown categorically, you know, like the four swimming test and other tests of endurance, that the rats that just know no escape just fail and die quickly, whereas the other rats that are given a bit of a chance, you know, they make it. And the whole thing about environmental enrichment, doing something you enjoy, folks, I mean, life's work, there's no doubt about it. I do a lot of work, so I'm totally up for some social and environmental enrichment, and I try to get it. We sure have a garden, and I like to walk to work, and I do get that, so I'm very lucky. But I think people out there who perhaps feel entrapped by their jobs or entrapped by their situation need to get outside of themselves as much as they can, and even if it just means stepping outside the door and just looking up at the sky. You know, there's things like that that you can do. Just give yourself a few moments and don't forget to breathe. I think it's an old Buddhist saying, don't forget to breathe. But I think we're in such a busy state in our life these days, and it seems to be getting busier and busier. And Dr. Pete will attest to that.
Speaking of breathing, I should mention that one of the main effects of taking thyroid or having a good thyroid function is producing carbon dioxide. So you don't want to overbreathe.
Right. Well, good. On that note, let's give out your information. And I will quickly mention something that I feel led to talk about, which is a very strange guy. seems to be doing the impossible. Wim Ho. You can check him out on the internet. I would not advocate what he does or the reason by which he does what he does, but overbreathing is something he ascribes to, which is completely the opposite philosophy to Dr. Pete. But anyway, for those people that have listened tonight and for those people that have called in, thank you for your questions. Dr. Pete's website is raypete.com. He's got at least 50, if not more, articles that are fully referenced on many different conditions, pathologies, states of mind, of being, well worth reading. Is quite heady, some of it is very scientific, but he's also very approachable too. I think he's still possibly approachable. I don't know where he gets the time from, but and we can also be reached 1-888-WBM-HERB or on the internet at westernbotanicalmedicine.com. I want to just say again, it's April 2019. We will have an Instagram page dedicated to Dr. Pete's work from A to Z, and it will be from the horse's mouth. I won't add to it or take away.
That brings to a close another fine episode of KMUD's Public Affairs Programming. And we do not have an underwriter for this slot, so if you got a lot of good information out of this show and you have a business or service, or I think it's pretty loose, you can be an underwriter on KMUD. Just call the office 923-2513 during business hours, ask to talk to Dara Lee, and I could be singing your praises right now for having supported KMUD. KMUD is what we are. It's Redwood Community Radio, KMUD Garberville, KMUE Eureka, KLAI Laytonville. And it's that time of the week when we get ready to step out on a wing and a prayer with Shaka Sickles.